there's in this is a little bit above what I just described, but there's quantum AI. So how to set up multiple computer clusters to have AI teach AI to discover new things like new medicines, new molecules, for example, could exist. It's not even fully developed. There's computer vision, which is taking vision or taking images and putting them through a computer for prediction, or trying to make multimodal models, so like four-dimensional models. AI can get very physical. AI is big. So when your car can drive itself, that's an example of physical AI. So someone has to understand a car and the AI in that sense. Generative AI, so some of the tools we use just fall into that one category, but they have to set it up. There's probably going to be more AI just by the time this podcast release, but those are some examples of some other non-applied AI applications.
This is the Let's Talk Marketing podcast, and I am your host, Katya Allison, on the LTM Pod. We cut through the noise to make marketing accessible, actionable, and a little more fun. Every episode, you'll walk away with insights you can apply to your business and sometimes even your life. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Ben, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. Very excited to have you on here as we dig into AI.
Thanks for having me on Let's Talk Marketing, and I'm excited to chat about AI as well.
Okay, now before we do get into the nitty-gritty, the meat and potatoes of AI, I want everybody to get to know you a little bit. You've had a very unique role in the past as an associate dean of AI. How do you describe what even that means? I know that you're an AI expert. What does that mean?
So now I'm the former dean of AI, but before I got into where I am now and how I really got into that dean role was that I'm helping individuals navigate what I call this really funky time period in everyone's life. It's affecting everyone. And that's the AI between times. We're not really in the AI future yet, but we're also moving out of the past where some of the old ways of working and living are semi-transformed, but not fully transformed. So I really like to focus on skills-based learning. A skill is a little bit different than a degree. A skill is you can master in a shorter amount of time. Usually people are good at 5 or 6 skills. Some masters are good at 7, but usually no more than 7. So communication, for example, leadership, prompt engineering, ethical AI, those are all skills that someone can acquire. What's different about a skill is there needs to be some sort of validation. So if I say I'm a 5-star Michelin chef, there was a lot of effort put into that. Someone validated that I can do that. People have tasted my food. They don't get food poisoning. I'm not claiming that I am a 5-star Michelin chef, by the way. But if I had that skill, it was validated. Similar with these other skills that I just mentioned, you have to validate them in order to become an expert in those fields. And then people tend to get really good at some things and maybe ignore some other skills. And I try to help unlock potential. So by maybe focusing less on AI and more on human skills, if you're already good at the AI, or more, maybe a little less on the human skills and more on AI if you're not quite into AI yet. But there's really two skill tracks that I think is going to emerge in the future. And those are AI skills and human skills.
How did you find yourself kind of in this area of expertise for your career? Because I can't imagine that that's like, you didn't grow up wanting to do this, or maybe you did. I have no idea. But like, how did you find that this was like a job? I know that must sound like such a silly question.
So with upskilling and reskilling, so with upskilling, you're getting better at the job you're currently in. So I'm assuming you're in marketing. So maybe you take some courses for something that you don't know about marketing now, but you want to learn because you're interested in it. Reskilling is when you're in marketing and then you become a data scientist. Totally, totally adjacent field. But there's probably some overlap, but not as much. So it's a total reskill. What I like to really focus on is my own upskilling and reskilling journey, because that's really what helped me get to where I am today. So I wasn't a data scientist by trade. I didn't have my master's degree initially. I honestly didn't even know what AI was, but many, many years ago, I actually did graduate with a, a bachelor's degree in healthcare administration. I wanted to run a hospital. And my first job task was to try to figure out how to forecast patient volumes for offsite clinics. And it sounds like that's super easy. And maybe I was a little naive at the time because I was a little bit younger than I am now. But when I go out to these doctor's offices, I thought they would just have the data, or the data that we had in the system would match what they were telling me. And it was like light years apart. And sometimes they would pull out files and tell me to count how many patients they had. They had no idea. It was very interesting.
That's
so insane. For example, in the system, we would say there was 1200 patients, and then they would literally show me this room with files, and there was much more than 1200 patients, or much less really, depending. But it's really a human problem that I was trying to solve, because if you recommend that an office isn't seeing enough patients, sometimes the healthcare system might close the office, move the physician somewhere else, and people do depend on it. So even though it wasn't a life-saving measure at the time, to me, it was important to get the right data. But that was a data literacy issue, not just for myself, but for the healthcare organization. How can we do this a little bit better? So then I was like, okay, so data's interesting. Putting the data into the system's interesting for me. I already have the business background because I had the undergraduate degree in healthcare administration. So it was kind of like an MBA. So what's the next thing that I could do? And then I kept seeing these ads on my phone for data science, a master's in data science and analytics, master's in just data science. They were popping up all over the place, and I have a more innovative mindset. So I pursued one of those degrees. I was able to complete it within a year, and this program allowed me to understand what AI was, understand the theory behind it. I got better at coding and computer science, all the skills a data scientist would have, presenting, human skills. And then I transferred back. Once I was in academics, I actually liked it a lot, going from a young student to a not as young student to, oh, this is pretty cool. I could work in academics. So I just got a job in academia when I graduated. That then went back to healthcare, and now I'm in the utility sector. So to your point originally, I didn't plan any of those things. But I did follow my passions. I had an upskilling and reskilling plan. I stuck with it. And eventually, you know, hard work pays off. I didn't even know a dean of AI existed. It's a newer role. But you never know what you find. And I think that's one of the important things for a listener to walk away with, is that make a learning plan, stick with it, understand what you're really good at, what you could grow at, and make sure you're trying to achieve those things regularly.
I like the way that you defines kind of like this fork in the road in your education, the upskilling and reskilling. I think so many people are so focused on, I want to be XYZ, that, you know, if you solve for one of those things, you're going to get further along, and it's going to introduce different opportunities, as it did to you. Now, what is it that you love about what you currently do? But get ready, because with the good comes the bad. I want to know what you don't like about what you're currently doing. So what do you love about what you currently do?
What I love about what I'm currently doing is that I'm showing that individuals can amplify themselves with AI. So a lot of folks are still scared. There's more negative news around AI typically than positive news. Anytime you search it on the news, it's something about an AI layoff. Not necessarily true. Some of it's clickbait. Some of it is very true. But again, we're in that funky between times period, and I'm helping individuals navigate that. And I'm trying to introduce learning concepts like skills instead of degrees. That way, folks have a bit more of a compass, because this change is going to happen very quickly. So to sit in a classroom for 4 years, or even to study on your own for 4 years or whatever the time may be, by the time you're done studying, AI is going to change again. So we have to be a little bit more agile about it. What I don't like about this upskilling and reskilling and creating your learning plan mantra is that sometimes individuals don't know what they're good at, and it's really or potentially some bias blind spots where they could improve. So you really have to, it becomes more of coaching, which that part I love, but it's getting them just to write down their learning, like physically write it down. They're like, I typed it out. I'm like, well, that's cool, but if you actually write it down, you're 76% more likely to complete it than any other method of even memorizing it, because now what you're saying is going to become true because you wrote it down. So some tidbits like that I think people are like, well, I'm afraid of AI. I don't want to learn any of it. I'm like, well, yeah, you have to at least learn one AI skill, at least one. I mean, you can have all six other human skills, but you need at least one AI skill. And that could be anything. Let's make art. It doesn't have to be in, like, a hobby. We could do Etsy, whatever you want to do, but let's try to do AI. Yeah.
I love that. Well, I'm ready to dive into just kind of AI in education, because I think that's a conversation that we just don't have. And much like you said, there are a bunch of different skills. What do those look like? In just kind of your bio in general, there is this term AI economy that I'd love for you to unpack for the listeners, because I think there's a lot that goes into that. So what do we mean when we're talking about kind of the AI economy, and just kind of what are some of the challenges in this?
Complicated question. So the AI economy is that funky between times that I'm going to keep mentioning throughout this entire podcast. It's also future state. So with AI comes a lot of trade-offs, and I like to call them trade-offs versus just advantages or disadvantages. They're absolutely trade-offs. One of the trade-offs is that AI is super personalized. So it can get to learn about you. It makes recommendations based upon what it knows, and that can help amplify your learning. It can help you create a better learning plan. It can help you find jobs that maybe you didn't even know existed. With that change, though, with that personalization change and AI recommending to folks, that those recommendations are also changing the job economy. So we're seeing new jobs emerge that didn't exist just 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago at this point. But prompt engineering, for example, we had machine learning engineers, maybe data science engineers, maybe some AI engineers, but AI engineering, a little bit different. Ethical and responsible AI folks. Yes, we had compliance and security, but folks that actually understand what's going on with the algorithm, that are trying to implement these ethical and diverse plans across organizations, it wasn't as robust as it was today. AI trainers and enablement folks, people like myself, yes, we were adjacent to the technology, but now there's actual job titles for those individuals. So the AI economy is creating this new opportunity. It's also creating a lot of fear. Some of the good news is, though, that even if you're afraid of AI, learning just a few AI skills, you don't have to be a super coder. You can just learn how to use OpenAI's ChatGPT, for example, or Gemini or Claude or whatever tool that your organization has. But just by knowing that tool, you can have a 52% premium on your salary. Companies that also invest in AI that have these learning plans have a 3x revenue growth. So they offset the costs of the AI by 3x. And the companies are much more likely to implement the AI correctly because folks understand what they're trying to implement. You don't have to understand all of the technical background, but it's kind of like when I went to go get my master's degree and understood what the AI could do. Now an individual that's a project manager is like, oh, I can use ChatGPT to make a project plan. This is how it works. So by having that little bit of knowledge, understanding the system, you're much more likely to A, use it and use it correctly. And companies are just trying to implement it, throw it in, and hope it works out. But that's why I call it a funky period. There's going to be some rough patches that we have to work through. But ultimately, at the end of this, I think there's going to be more jobs than people. I also believe that AI is going to allow humans to become more human again. So what do I mean by that? If AI is doing some tasks that you don't really like to do, maybe the 40-hour work week becomes 30. Doesn't mean you're getting paid any less, because you're still producing more output. Companies are still making more revenue, that is. Some of the opportunity costs there is maybe you have, you know, a 4-day work week, or however, or more split time opportunities, or more hybrid work. I actually call work with AI blended work, not hybrid work, because AI can definitely do some of the tasks, but you still have to check it. So the AI economy is this, and it's going to continually evolve, but it's a state where humans and AI work together to produce outputs, and AI is really good at some of those outputs, and humans are really good at those outputs, or some of those other outputs.
Yeah, so it's basically a huge umbrella for everything AI, from the current state to the future state, and all of the jobs and skills that kind of roll under, Yeah, or roll up into that, which I think is a fantastic definition for it. There are a couple of things that you said that I do want to just kind of go back, drill down on just a little bit more. And one of those is kind of leveraging, well, there's two thoughts, right, that I want to drill down with you. One of them is using AI inside of the classroom. For one, how do you do that? And then the second is more business oriented as far as like the skills. So first, let's kind of unpack AI inside of a classroom, because I think that, and this is for even not just, you know, undergrads, it's, you know, going from, you know, high school students who are leveraging like a ChatGPT. Is it making students, I'm going to use air quotes here, is it making students dumber because they're using that? What are your thoughts when people say that? Because I know that I've gotten into conversations where people are like, no, kids are just using this. Everyone's just using this. And we're all just getting dumber because we're letting some tool do our jobs. I'd love to hear your opinion on that.
Let's unpack what education is, at least in the United States first. It's all time-based. So you go to high school for a certain amount of time, then you go to middle school. It's all time. You then go to college. It's 4 years. Sometimes master's are 1 or 2 years. Doctoral degrees are usually 4 years. Again, all measured off time. It's a very interesting system, but the theory behind it is that in order to learn at those different levels, you do need to spend a certain amount of time learning and doing in order to, I'm using air quotes, like you did, to master it. So usually it's 10,000 hours, 10,000 hours to master a skill. So what's changing? Why do we need to change education? Why do I care about skills? Maybe a little bit more than degree. I do think degrees are going to stay relevant, but maybe a little bit more than degrees. And the reason why all this is changing is because now ChatGPT or any of the other AIs have a lot of information at your fingertips. It's not the same as Google. The AI, every time someone interacts with it, gets slightly more intelligent, and it's going to keep making those incremental gains in intelligence until it's probably going to surpass our own intelligence. And it will be the only other thing to be able to surpass our intelligence, because we keep interacting with it and asking it, to your point, maybe some individuals are cheating with it. But the reason why it's so good at that is because a bunch of other people are doing the same thing. So like I said before, there's some trade-offs with using this type of tool. And yes, education has some limitations. It takes a lot of time. It's probably not as accessible. It's very expensive it could be cheaper, more accessible. Not everybody has the same type of access to education. So yeah. A college by you might be different than a college by me. That could have different, a middle school could be different by you than it is by me. It depends on where you live, right? And how affluent the community is and all those different components. With AI, if you have $20, you know, it's pretty evenly across and you know how to use it pretty well, now everybody has the same opportunity, which is a little bit interesting. So with AI in education, it's probably going to lower costs because it's just more scalable that way. So now individual, yeah, like a professor or even a dean could implement this technology, and now a individual teaching in the front of the classroom becomes more of a facilitator. So you can have larger cohorts, you can have different class styles, a lot of opportunities open with that different modality. Yeah. You're also allowing different learning types. So usually in education, there's about seven, but I, to be honest, there's probably more than seven, but seven that I can think of. There's quizzes, then there's exams, there's papers, there's projects, there's all these different assessment types, but there's only so many of them, is my point. With AI, you actually have to, if you're using it correctly in your classroom, you actually have to prove what you know much more quickly. And that allows learning to happen in a much more agile sense. So, for example, I know a computer science faculty member that just implemented this, but essentially every project you have to run through AI. And not only does the AI give you feedback like it would through OpenAI, but it doesn't give you the answer. It just points you in the direction. But by building it in the class, students are less likely to leave the class to go cheat. So the cheating rate went down 30%. So essentially no one's cheating. And the rate of information and the speed in which they're moving through the curriculum increased by 50%. So they're able to cover essentially a course and a half in the same time they were just covering that one course. So imagine if every course did this. Now for the same amount of tuition, a student can cover another whole half degree more before they enter the workforce, which then links back to the AI economy. If workers are more knowledgeable, they require a higher premium. They have new skills because AI wasn't in these courses before. So they're learning AI as they're learning coding, two completely different skills. So yes, there's a lot to unpack there to answer your question about the cheating. If it's not implemented correctly, it's garbage in, garbage out. So if it's not implemented correctly, I'm actually putting the onus on what the school or the college.
Yeah.
You should be trying to build with it, not around it.
I think the garbage in and garbage out is a great way to actually articulate it as well, too, because I know that in conversations that I've had in regards to using AI, it's, you know, someone who's putting in one sentence is not going to get a robust response. And then it's not going to, like you said, it incrementally gets better and more knowledgeable by what you put into it and like really building it as an AI muscle that's a tool that you can actually use. And I think it's fascinating that you said that professor implemented using it as a tool, because essentially I find you have to think differently if you're going to use AI for something, right? Like I'm not searching. I guess that's more of what I'm saying is that I'm not putting
you need to know what you're doing to your point, right?
So you
have to know code to understand if the code is giving you is correct.
Exactly. And you have
to
be able
that's a higher order skill.
Yeah.
So now these students that, you know, they're first year students, so they don't have much of a coding background, but now if they're coding at a second to almost third year student's ability just through going from this one course, imagine how they're going to code at the end of it. It's pretty interesting just to see that one trade-off, but you could implement this in any type of course in the same way.
So this is AI in education. Talk to me about the skills that I need to learn in order to really master AI, or can we even master AI as a tool that we use from a business perspective? What skills do I need?
So there's a couple different types of AI. So I think it's important to help distinguish what you're trying to master. So in this case, I'm assuming it's applied AI. So applied AI is when a business uses AI applications, name any tool, any of those AI tools, they use those tools to help amplify their business. So they're not creating new tools and they're not developing new technologies, like some of the tech leaders. So pretty much any other company besides tech might fall into this category, and you're trying to get really good with AI. So what skills do you need? Focusing on the human skills, you still need to invest in that. So communication, leadership, empathy, ethical design, those are all human skills. Still very relevant. They're probably going to be more relevant than the AI skills I'm going to list. But you have to teach everybody prompt engineering, AI fundamentals. Some people call it literacy. I don't really like the word literacy. I like more of the word fundamentals because it's going to change your fluency. It's like a language that is going to change, that you're going to have to change with it. You also have to understand how to implement this in a governance sense, which is a quasi AI skill, but it's also a quasi human skill, because you have to be technical enough to know what the AI is doing.
Yeah.
But you also have to be good enough to work with the humans to be able to identify how far you want the AI to go. So the skills are interchangeable. There's really no, you ask for specific skills. As long as you're learning some AI skills and some human skills, you're probably going to be all set. But as we move forward in this funky between times, you're going to still want to focus on those human skills. And you're probably going to want to ultimately invest more in those human skills than the AI skills, even though right now it's better to invest in the AI skills.
So prompt engineering, human skills, that's applied AI. What's the other AI that you said?
there's technical AI, so more technical AI. So let's pretend I work at Apple or OpenAI or any of the other firms that are actually developing these tools. There's a technical backend that you have to know. So it's Python, Java, scripting. You have to understand the theory behind the algorithms to get them to actually work. This is a little bit above what I just described, but there's quantum AI. So how to set up multiple computer clusters to have AI teach AI, to discover new things like new medicines, new molecules, for example, could exist. It's not even fully developed. There's computer vision, which is taking vision or taking images and putting them through a computer for prediction, or trying to make multimodal models, so like four-dimensional models. AI can get very physical. AI is big. So when your car can drive itself, that's an example of physical AI. So someone has to understand a car and the AI in that sense. Generative AI, so some of the tools we use just fall into that one category, but they have to set it up. There's probably going to be more AI just by the time this podcast release, but those are some examples of some other non-applied AI applications.
You know, with things changing so quickly and evolving, how do you stay up to date on like the latest with AI? Because you're right, by the time the podcast comes out, there could be another AI tool or another version of something. How are you staying up to date on things like that?
So most of it's actually using the tools to understand what they can do. And I actually use AI to summarize AI news articles that might be undervalued, so to speak, like non-common news streams. Not research, though, even though the research is important, but what developments are happening in quantum AI, for example, what companies are investing in that? How are they developing their systems? Why are they doing this? So you can have an AI setup. It's called an AI agent. It can go gather all this information and produce like a one-page report. And then it cites its sources. So I ask it how it came to these conclusions, and it gives me the sources so I can go check it myself. But by digesting, I guess, the non-mainstream AI news, I'm actually learning more than just AI layoffs or a company that implemented AI that went horribly. Most of the current events around AI are not that positive. So I'm trying to discover other ways. To answer your question, there's this great book called The Instant AI Agency. And I know the books can become outdated very quickly, but this book, I'm not a marketing expert by any means, but this individual set up an ad agency using AI. And by learning other people's AI systems, it helps me learn how to think more broadly about setting up systems. So you can take things away out of these books or out of these podcasts that aren't directly about AI, and then apply it to the AI. Or you might find someone really good to have the AI impersonate. So sometimes you're like, hey, I found this book by this author. Put yourself in that role, and I'm trying to solve this problem. How would you solve it?
That's fascinating. And I'm right there with you. I think that there's a lot of inspiration out there in having you think differently than what you currently think AI is. And in my opinion, I don't think that we push ourselves as much as we should to learn more, understand more, and look at it beyond what you mentioned, which is just like an applied sense of using ChatGPT or like a chat. Well, I'm saying ChatGPT, but of any sort of AI, because I think that chat is one that everybody just is familiar with and has touched in one way or another, whether you are an avid user of AI or you are not an avid user of AI. I'm also just kind of curious, in your opinion, where do we just sort of draw the line between AI, what AI handles, and then what should kind of remain human in sort of teaching, learning, business? Like, do you have thoughts on like where that line is drawn?
This question is difficult because it depends on how you think AI is going to land, and it's not fully fleshed out yet. How I think AI is going to land is, we haven't approached this moment yet, but I think we're pretty close. We're going to have an uh-oh moment. An example is just recently AI impersonated the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio. We didn't really get much information about what was tested or what information came out of that, or even how the AI interacted with other government agencies. But yeah, just level it up a little bit. Like, AI gets better every 6 months. It usually gets twice as good than it is now. So in about a year, you could have another really good deep fake in that sense of some sort of political figure that could cause some catastrophic damage. So now we're investing so heavily into AI without really thinking of the implications. That's probably it's kind of like a knee-jerk reaction. They're going to want to probably take the foot off the gas a little bit to maybe figure this out a little bit more before we just go full steam ahead. So right now we're advancing very quickly to answer your question. We're probably still going to be investing at least at the same levels, but we're going to have one of those uh-oh moments. Everybody's going to go, oh crap, we have to start thinking of, like, have real thought about this. How are we going to safeguard it? How is it going to be used at the company? How can humans work with it? Yeah. How is this going to impact the work? Like, what has come out of some of these mass layoffs because of AI? The company just ends up hiring all the people back because the AI didn't work. But now they have to pay them more because of the wage premium. So they couldn't even think out their own process before implementing it. It's kind of silly, but there's going to be more silly mistakes like that.
Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head. It's a knee-jerk reaction, I think, to AI in both ways, right? In, you know, letting go of people without fully understanding how to execute it, and that you should have a human behind it that fully understands it, which kind of leads me to my next question. Like, you know, as professionals, what kind of advice do you have for people who want to stay relevant with the evolution of AI? What kind of skills should I be looking to have, what should I continue to upskill or reskill in general? Like, if I had to focus on one thing, what would that one thing be to be like, hey, this is how you can really just stay kind of in cadence with AI?
I'd actually think a little bit beyond skills. And one thing, okay, and you're already doing this, so this advice doesn't apply to you, but I would start thinking about your personal brand. And it sounds, a lot of folks are like, what do you mean personal brand? How you're represented on the internet, what articles you have out there, do you self-publish blogs? Any information that has your name on it technically is your personal brand. And the reason why personal brand becomes so important with AI is because AI is a recommendation system. So it goes and scrapes the internet of all the information it has, and then people use AI like a search engine. So they're going to search, even though it's not meant for that, but they're going to search for an AI workforce expert. And if your name doesn't come up, then they might not select you. So it's ultimately, I think AI is going to replace search engines, which is why your personal brand is so important, because then you'll get recommended. And if you're on that short list, you have a much higher likelihood of that recommendation than now. Okay, a lot of people probably aren't going to go from the AI over to the search engine back into the AI. It's all going to be one-stop shopping. So by getting your personal brand out there early, you have much higher relevance and probability of being recommended in the future. And be creative.
That's totally not what I thought you were going to say. It's so interesting that I thought you were going to say something much more skill related from an AI perspective. I welcome the fact that you didn't say that. And I think that that's a really interesting take, right? Like, getting focused on your personal brand, you becoming the expert in the field that you are, so that you can be something or someone that is referenced in the future. What an interesting take. Like, I like it. It's Katya approved. That's what I will say. I mean, also then looking ahead, let's say in just kind of the next 5 years, how do you imagine just kind of learning and the workforce looks like with AI?
It's going to change a lot. So there's this concept of learning ecosystems. So right now, typically you go to school, then you go to work. Sometimes workforce takes on some projects with academics, but essentially they're two different universes. They're going to be potato mashed together. Individuals are going to go to university. Very quickly, they're going to go over to industry. Maybe you have a mentorship. Maybe this is more of an internship experience or experiential education. But with skills changing so rapidly and quickly, talent's going to have to go back and forth just to acquire the skills that they thought they had. How will verification work? So I get this question a lot in that. Well, if you have someone in the field, so let's pretend I want to learn project management. So I get paired with a project manager. Very different skill set than data science. They can validate that I can manage a project. I can run the backlog. I can plan the tasks. The scoping was correct. Someone there can validate that. Then I go back to the university and say, like, hi, professor, this is all validated. Maybe there's some theoretical exam that I have to go through or knowledge test. And then I can be validated that I have that skill. And then the process repeats. And the benefit for academics is, or academia as a whole, is that instead of trying to drive the content, you're more engaged with what the industry actually needs. And that's why I think it's going to help drive down costs, because instead of just focusing on 5,000 students, 10,000 students, you might be able to focus on a whole geographic area, especially if you're a healthcare school or one of those already niche schools, because there's not as many of those around. But if you can think about skills in the sense of currency, and you're always trading currency in and out, a degree is usually one and done. So we're kind of changing our mindset a little bit. It's no longer one and done. We have to keep current with this. It's just changing too fast not to.
Well, and exactly like you said, the keeping current means that you're always learning something. And even going back to what you mentioned about, like, you know, AI advances every 6 months, there's like a newer, better version of it. Can you imagine that? Like, if I stayed with just the knowledge that I have right now, then I'm dating myself 6 months from now. And that happening so quickly is just, it's pretty mind-boggling. And you would think that people would, it's like this red flag of like, how can I use it? What can I do? How can I use this more in my day-to-day, in my work life, to learn a little bit more as well too? I was having a conversation with a family member the other day, and I said, you know, most people are scared of using AI. And like, my advice is always just use it for figuring out what you want to eat for dinner.
Use it for fun. That counts as learning. Yeah. I say that all the time. If you like to cook, plan a meal. If you like to work out, have it plan an exercise routine for you. If you like writing, focus on your personal brand and write a blog post. Like, it doesn't have to be this very mundane curriculum. Like, you can have a lot of fun with it. One of my students set up an Etsy shop and does Etsy designs with AI. Didn't really know much about AI before they started. Now they're making pretty good money running that store. So you can follow a passion with it. It doesn't have to be academic.
Yeah. Oh my, I agree 1,000%. I could talk to you all day about AI, but I have one final question to wrap up the podcast and our conversation. And that is, if you knew then what you know now, what's the advice that you give to yourself?
I always thought that I had a good personal brand until I really started to realize what a personal brand was. So I would have started working on my personal, really putting time into it like I am now, a long time ago, realizing how the world's changing so rapidly. So I really encourage people to do that.
That's good. That's great advice. So listen up, listeners. Work on your personal brand. It is going to make you relevant in an AI world. Well, Ben, thank you so much for coming on here and just sharing your knowledge, dropping these knowledge bombs on us. I really appreciate it. And I've definitely walked away with some insights.
Thanks for having me. If folks want to keep in touch, my website's bentaskerai.com. I can help you create your personalized learning plan. I help organizations do it at the organization level. So I help companies implement learning plans. And if you need just help figuring out something to do with AI, happy to help. Thank you.
Thanks. Let's dive into it. Let's talk key takeaways. Key takeaway number one, upskilling and reskilling is the new college. So let's talk about something that's fundamentally changing, how we think about education and career development. For decades, the path was clear, right? You go to school, you get a degree, you get a job, and that degree carries you through your career.
Maybe you go back for your master's if you're ambitious, but that model, it's changing. We can't afford to think in just sort of these four-year increments anymore, at least according to Ben. Not when AI is evolving every 6 months. Think about that for a second. By the time someone completes a traditional four-year degree focused on current AI capabilities, the technology has already evolved 8 times. 8 complete cycles of advancement. That graduate is essentially walking into a job market with knowledge that's already outdated. This is why upskilling and reskilling have become so critical. Now, upskilling means you're getting better at the job you currently have. You're adding new capabilities to your existing role. Maybe you're in marketing and you're learning prompt engineering to enhance your content creation, or you're diving into AI-powered analytics to get better at understanding just kind of the customer data, your marketing data that's in front of you. You aren't changing your careers. You're sort of evolving within your current path. Now, reskilling is different. That's when you are making a more significant pivot, moving from one field to an adjacent one. Think about it as going from marketing to maybe data science, or from project management to AI implementation. There's some overlap for sure, but it's more of a substantial shift that requires learning entirely new frameworks and methodologies. What I love about this approach is that it's faster, more targeted, and more aligned with how skills actually work in the real world. Now, Ben mentioned that people typically excel at about like 5 to 7 skills, not dozens, right? Not hundreds, 5 to 7. And here's the thing, those skills need to be validated. You can't just say you're good at something. You need to prove it through results, through projects, through that real world application. The traditional education system, is much more time-based. You sit in classes for a certain number of hours, you complete assignments, and time itself becomes a measure of learning. But skills-based learning flips that. It's outcome-based. Can you actually do the thing? Can you demonstrate competency? That is what matters. I'm seeing the shift play out in real time. We're moving toward what just kind of Ben calls this learning ecosystems, where education and workforce aren't separate universes. They're intertwined. You might work for a while, realize you need a specific skill, go learn it through a short intensive program, get it validated, and then jump right back into work with that new capability. Then the cycle repeats. It's continuous, it's agile, and honestly, it's more honest about how learning actually happens. In short, your degree might open doors. So I'm not saying don't get it. Side note, but it's your skills that is what is going to keep you in the room that you walk into. And in an AI-powered economy, those skills, they need to be constantly updated. The question isn't whether you'll need to upskill or reskill. It's really when and how often. Marinate on that one. Okay, key takeaway number 2. You need to use AI as a tool, not as a thing that does your job. Let me be really clear about something. AI is not here to do your job. And if you're trying to use it that way, you're setting yourself up for failure, or worse, making yourself replaceable. What really struck me most in my conversation with Ben was the side of blended work, not just hybrid work. Blended work means humans and AI are working together. Now, each doing what they do best. AI can handle the repetitive, the time-consuming tasks that really honestly drain your energy, and that's not where you get your joy. You can handle the strategy, the creativity, the relationship building, the nuanced decision-making that requires judgment and empathy. Think about that computer science professor Ben mentioned. Instead of banning AI or treating it like cheating, he built it directly into his curriculum. Students had to run their code through the AI for feedback, but the AI didn't give them the answers. What it did is it pointed them into the right direction. That is the power of using AI as a tool. It's not replacing the learning process. It's enhancing it. It's not doing the work for the students. It's helping them learn faster and more effectively. This same principle applies in business, but here's where so many companies are getting it wrong. They're implementing AI without totally understanding what it actually does or how it needs to be integrated. You see some companies doing mass layoffs because they think AI is going to replace those workers, only to realize the AI can't actually handle everything those humans were doing. So they end up rehiring people at a higher salary because now there's a wage premium for anyone who actually knows how to work with AI. It's almost comical if it weren't so wasteful and damaging to people's lives. Now, AI is what you make of it. Garbage in, garbage out. If you don't implement it correctly, if you don't train people on how to use it, if you don't build it into your workflows thoughtfully, if you don't have humans validating and checking the outputs, you're just going to get garbage results. AI is only as good as how you use it. So what does good AI use look like? Great question. It is about partnership. Let's say you're creating a marketing campaign, for example. AI can help you research your target audience, analyze competitor strategies, and generate initial content ideas, and even create variations of maybe A-B testing, right? But you're the one deciding on the strategic direction. You're crafting the core message that aligns with your brand voice, and you're making those judgment calls about what resonates with your specific audience. And more importantly, you're building relationships that turn campaigns into long-term customer loyalty. Now, AI amplifies your capabilities. It doesn't replace them. And when AI handles the tasks that you don't love, the data entry, the initial research, the repetitive formatting, you get to focus on the work that actually makes you valuable, the work that requires your unique human skills. The professionals who thrive in this new economy won't be the ones who can get AI to do their job for them. They'll be the ones who know how to partner with AI to do their job better than ever. Now, this actually is a good segue for my final key takeaway. At some point, the rush of this AI will start to plateau and the human skills are going to come into play even more. So you can't lose your human touch. We're in this moment of absolute AI frenzy. Every company is racing to implement. Every professional is scrambling to learn it. And there's this underlying anxiety that if you're not all in on AI right now, you're going to be left behind. And there is some truth to that. There's truth to that urgency, but there's also something important we're missing in all of this chaos. We're heading toward what Ben called an uh-oh moment. We're advancing so fast, implementing AI so aggressively that we haven't really thought it through all of the implications. And at some point, probably sooner than we think, we're going to hit that moment, that collective realization that maybe we need to pump the brakes, think more carefully about governance, about ethics, about how we're actually using the technology. The investment will probably stay high, but the approach is going to get more thoughtful and more measured. And when that happens, you know what's going to matter most? Human skills. Yep, you heard it here first, human. You need to learn AI skills at a minimum. You need to learn prompt engineering, understanding AI fundamentals, and getting comfortable with the tools. But you can't let that come at the expense of your human skills. Communication, leadership, empathy, ethical decision-making. These aren't just nice to haves. They're going to be what differentiates you when AI capabilities plateau. And here's why. AI can analyze data better than you. It can create content faster than you. It can process information and skills you can't even comprehend. But AI can't build genuine relationships. It can't understand the unspoken needs of a client. It can't make ethically nuanced decisions in gray area situations. It can't lead a team through change with empathy and wisdom. It can't craft a brand message that truly resonates because it understands human emotion and cultural context. Those human skills, they are your moat. They are what AI can't replicate, no matter how advanced it becomes. And right now, it's probably more important to invest in AI skills because the technology is advancing so rapidly and you need to stay current. But as we move forward, that pendulum is going to swing back. Those human skills are going to become more valuable, not less, because once everyone has access to similar AI tools and capabilities, the differentiator is no longer going to be AI. It's the human using it. Think about it this way. When everyone has a calculator, being able to just kind of punch numbers into a calculator isn't a valuable skill. Understanding which calculations matter, interpreting what the results mean, and applying that insight to solve real business problems, that's what matters. And that requires human judgment, creativity, and being a strategic thinker. So here's my challenge to you. As you're learning these AI skills, and you should be learning them, don't neglect the human side of your development. Are you getting better at communication? At communicating complex ideas clearly? Are you developing your leadership capabilities? Are you cultivating empathy and emotional intelligence? So important. Are you thinking critically about your ethical implications of the work you're doing? The future isn't human versus AI. It's human plus AI. And the human part of the equation, well, that's your job to cultivate. So don't lose the human touch in the rush to embrace the technology. Your human skills are what make you irreplaceable. What did you take away from today's episode? I want to hear it. A very special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Eich. And thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.